It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown still here in China, but excited to introduce a very special guest host to you, Dr. Frank Turek, author, apologist, and oh, this guy's on the campuses, he's doing it on the front lines, and he doesn't have enough faith to be an atheist.
Well, thanks, Dr. Brown. All the way from China with that intro. Yes, my name is Frank Turek. I co-wrote a book called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. I got an email not long ago from a United States Marine. So I knew this man was no sissy. But he was not writing me as a tough guy. He was writing me as a distraught father. He said, my daughter was the top Christian student in her high school class. In fact, she helped lead the youth group. She won several scholarships from Christian organizations to go to college. She could take the scholarships to the college of her choice. And so she decided to go to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill to win the campus for Christ. And, of course, it needs to be won for Christ. So he said, look, we sent her off there. And about 4 weeks into the semester, her first semester, I got a phone call from her. Her words devastated me. She said, Dad, I don't believe in God anymore. Don't believe in God anymore? What? He said, I got in my car. I drove 4 hours from Hickory, North Carolina, all the way to Chapel Hill. I sat down with her, and I got nowhere with her. What do you mean you don't believe in God anymore? What happened? And she said, well, you know, I have a New Testament professor who went to an Ivy League school. So, of course, he must know the truth, right? I mean, if you go to an Ivy League school, they always tell you the truth there, right? Wrong. Anyway, he went to an Ivy League school, and he's an atheist. He's teaching a religion class. No, it wasn't this guy, Bart Ehrman, another guy there. You may have heard of Bart Ehrman, a very skeptical former Ivy Leaguer who was a fundamentalist, a Christian fundamentalist, and gave it all up. Now he's a new kind of fundamentalist, an agnostic or atheistic fundamentalist. But it wasn't him. It was another professor. Anyway, she said, this professor said, we don't even know who wrote the Gospels, and the Bible has errors in it, so, Dad, I'm an atheist now. He said, is there anything I can do about this? I was actually telling the story once in church, and some guy in the middle of the service yelled out, yeah, you know what I do? I bring her home. Hey, you know, that's not bad advice. Your daughter goes off to a school, and 4 weeks into her experience there, she totally abandons the faith she's had for her entire life. She's not mature enough to go to college, because I can guarantee you this, friends, that in 4 weeks, she did not investigate all the evidence and decide, well, you know, Christianity's false. You know what really happened? She went off there to school without any evidence. She went there with an emotional feel-goodism. But if you were to ask her, why is Christianity true, she probably couldn't give you one good reason other than Jesus lives in my heart. As true as that is, that's not an objective source of evidence. You can't share that with somebody else. You have to provide some evidence that Christianity is true that other people can observe. And what we're going to do here on this broadcast today is we're going to give you some of that evidence to show you why you ought not have enough faith to be an atheist. It takes a lot more faith to be an atheist than to be a Christian. We're going to go through some of that evidence today and maybe a little bit later get into your phone calls. A little bit later, if you want to join the program, the number is 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH or 866-348-7884. I'm Frank Turek. I'm filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown, and I would hope you'd pray for him as he's over in China right now with the Billy Graham organization. And he's over there providing some guidance and some evidence that Christianity is true to a dark culture. I'm back in just a few minutes. Don't touch that dial. See you in a couple.
Change the world.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, Frank Turek with you. As Dr. Michael Brown is in China with the Billy Graham Organization doing some great work over there. We're talking today about evidence for the Christian faith, for the Christian worldview. And I mentioned in the first few minutes that a young lady who went off to Chapel Hill just gave up her faith in about 4 weeks. And one of the reasons is because we have not been, and when I say we, I mean the church, we have not been doing what the Lord has commanded us to do. The greatest commandment, of course, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Christians don't get brownie points for being stupid. We're supposed to know what we believe and why we believe it. And of course, we haven't done what Peter told us to do. Always be ready to give an answer for the hope that you have. In fact, the Greek word there is apologia or apologia, which means not to say you're sorry. It means to give an answer. That's where we get the word apologetics from. We're giving an answer. We're giving reasons. We're giving evidence that Christianity is indeed true. Paul, of course, says in 2 Corinthians 10:5, always, or he says, demolish arguments and take every thought captive to Christ. In fact, demolish arguments that are counter to the Christian worldview. Can you do that? I'm telling you, when you go to college, they're not going to, in most cases, affirm the Bible. They are going to put their crosshairs on the Bible. In fact, college professors are 5 times more likely to be atheists than the general public. 53% of college professors view evangelical students unfavorably. The next closest group they view unfavorably were Mormons at about 30%. And the next closest group after them were Muslims at 22%. This is from a recent survey. Now, don't get me wrong. I wish they would view nobody unfavorably out of the gate. But college professors are 2.5 times more likely to view an evangelical student unfavorably than a Muslim student. And you know what? In many ways, I don't blame them. Why? Because what happens when a student gets to college? A Christian student, an evangelical student. Do they have reasons for their faith? Usually not. It's not so much that the Christian mind is lost at college. The Christian mind never gets to college. You know, they get there with all this feel-good emotionalism, and then the professor gives them what appears to be facts that seem to counter Christianity, and they don't know how to handle it. Now, if you think I'm just making all this up, the surveys show that about 75% of young people walk away from the church once they leave the home, and only about a third come back to the church by the time they're age 30. So you're losing 3 out of 4 young people who are brought up in the church their entire lives. They go off to college, they get out on their own, they just stop going. Now, does this mean they all leave the faith necessarily? No, not necessarily, but it's a pretty bad sign when 3 out of 4 don't go to church anymore. Now, how do you counter this? Well, one of the ways you counter it is you give people evidence before they go off to college. You do what Jesus told us to do. You do what Peter told us to do. You do what Paul told us to do. That's what we, of course, try and do. Dr. Brown does it very well at AskDrBrown.org. Our ministry, and you're listening to Frank Turek as I fill in for Dr. Michael Brown today. Our ministry is called crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. And what we do is we provide evidence for Christianity and we cross-examine ideas against it. Go to a lot of college campuses, high schools, and churches and provide this kind of evidence that Christianity is indeed true. Now, what is some of the evidence that Christianity or that shows that Christianity is true? You know, you really only have to answer 4 questions in the affirmative. 4 questions. In other words, if you answer yes to these 4 questions, you can show beyond any reasonable doubt that Christianity is true. What are the 4 questions? The first question is, does truth exist? The second question is, does God exist? The third question is, are miracles possible? And the 4th question is, the New Testament historically reliable? Does truth exist? Does God exist? Are miracles possible? Is the New Testament true or historically reliable? If you answer yes to those 4 questions, you can show beyond any reasonable doubt that Christianity is true. Not beyond all doubt, but beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, why are these the 4 questions? Truth, God, miracles, and the New Testament. Well, look, if there is no truth, if it's just true for you but not for me, then all truth is relative. Then obviously the Bible can't be true, right? Of course, if there is no truth, then any book written by an atheist can't be true either. You see, so the idea that there is no truth cuts both ways. It cuts out Christianity, but it also cuts out anything else, including atheism. We'll deal with that a little bit later in the program. The second question, does God exist? You can't have a word from God if there's no God. If there's no God, throw the Bible away and every other book that talks about God. I hope to show you during this program today that there really is very good evidence that there is a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, moral, personal, intelligent creator out there. You don't even need the Bible to know this. Now, the arguments that we'll talk about today, if we get time, are taught in the Bible, but you don't need the Bible to know them. We're going to look at a couple of arguments that have scientific evidence behind them and one that has philosophical evidence behind them. And when you add up those arguments, you can show that there really is a theistic God out there, a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, moral, personal, intelligent creator. The third question, are miracles possible? Obviously, the Bible can't be true if miracles are not possible. But I hope to show you during the course of the program today. And by the way, if those listening, you don't get the whole show, this is a two-hour show. I know you might get a half hour, you may get an hour. You can get the podcast of this show. You can also you can go online to the Line of Fire and listen to it live. Or you can get the CD of this show and the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, by just calling in to our number. For just a $20 donation. I'll tell you more about that a little bit later. But the third question, are miracles possible? Obviously, the Bible can't be true if miracles are not possible. But I hope to show you today that not only are miracles possible, but the greatest miracle in the Bible has already occurred, and we have scientific evidence for it. Then and only then can you look at the fourth question, is the New Testament reliable? Testament doesn't have a prayer. If truth doesn't exist, God doesn't exist, or miracles are not possible. But if truth exists, God exists, and miracles are possible, then you can see if the New Testament documents are telling us the truth about what happened to Jesus and his apostles about 2,000 years ago. Now, when you do that, if the answer to those four questions is yes, then Christianity necessarily follows. And if this kind of information was taught to young people before they went off to college, I submit to you that 75% exodus rate would be much, much lower. So let's talk about it. And if you want to join the conversation, 888-34-TRUTH. 888-34-TRUTH. If you want to be on the program, I'm Frank Turek, filling in for Dr. Michael Brown. Okay, the first question, does truth exist? It's commonly thought in our culture today, all truth is relative, it's true for you, but not for me, all these things, right? How would you show that that particular claim can't be true? Well, you just simply ask a question. And this is one of the most valuable things I've ever learned, ladies and gentlemen. I learned this when I was 33 years old at seminary, right here in Charlotte, North Carolina, Southern Evangelical Seminary, ses.edu, a great seminary to go to if you're interested in apologetics, getting evidence for what you believe. If somebody says something to you like there is no truth, you should ask that person a question. And what you're going to do is turn the claim on itself. Turn the claim on itself. If somebody says it's true or there is no truth, you simply ask the question, is that true? Is it true that there is no truth? Because if it's true that there is no truth, then the claim there is no truth can't be true, but it claims to be true. Are you with me on this? Can you see this is self-defeating to say that there is no truth? Of course. It's like saying I can't speak a word in English. Well, you just did. It's like saying my brother is an only child. Or my parents had no kids that lived. You see, these are all self-defeating statements. They can't be true. And our culture is replete with these statements. And once you learn how to apply the claim to itself, you're going to become a fearless apologist. So if somebody says there is no truth, you say, is that true? Or if somebody says all truth is relative, apply the claim to itself. What question do you ask them? You ask them, is that a relative truth? If somebody says there are no absolutes, what should you say to them? Is that an absolute truth? Or if you want to have some fun, you can say, are you absolutely sure? Or if somebody says, it's true for you, but not for me. What do you say to somebody who says that? You say, hey, true for you, but not for me. Is that true for everybody? Is true for you, but not for me, true for everybody? Because if true for you, but not for me, is true for everybody, then true for you, but not for me, can't be true because it's true for everybody. Did you get that? I know that's a mind bender there, but that's because it's self-defeating. Actually, there's a more fun way of dealing with this. Some of you are out there driving right now. Let's suppose you're driving 90 miles an hour. If you are right now, slow down, okay? But you're out there driving 90 miles an hour in a 55. Cop sees you, pulls you over, walks up to your car, knocks on the glass. You put the window down. He says, you were going 90 in a 55. very easy to get out of a ticket. You simply look back up at him and you go, that's true for you, but not for me. And you speed away. You going to get away with that? No. If it's true you were going 90, that's true for all people at all times in all places when referring to you at that time. It's just true. And it's true that Jesus rose from the dead for all people at all times in all places, if in fact he really did. Did he rise from the dead? Well, that's what we're going to talk about a little bit later. Well, what about this claim you hear a lot? You ought not judge. Well, we're going to get to that right after the break. Because if there's one statement that seems to stop Christians in their tracks is you ought not judge. Didn't Jesus say don't judge? No, no, no. 1,000 times no. We'll talk about it right after the break. I'm Frank Turek. Crossexamine.org is the website. Back in 2 minutes. Don't touch that dial.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Dr. Michael Brown in China right now. Frank Turek filling in for you, co-author of I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Our website's crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it. It's a privilege to be on here with my filling in for my friend, Dr. Michael Brown, a brilliant guy, and The Line of Fire is just a great program. I listened to it many times myself. Today, we're talking about the evidence for Christianity. And before the break, I was talking about the fact that truth does exist. And one of the objections you get when you're talking about issues like this is you ought not judge. Well, first of all, I want you to think for a second about that claim. You ought not judge. If you apply the claim to itself, what would you say to somebody who says you ought not judge? You ought to ask them, then why are you judging me for judging? See, that's a judgment to say you ought not judge. So it's a judgment itself. Secondly, people will say, well, didn't Jesus say don't judge? No, he did not. 1,000 times no. What did he say in Matthew chapter 7, 1? He said, judge not lest you be judged. By the same standard you judge others, you'll be judged by that standard. So before you try and take the speck out of your brother's eye, take the log out of your own eye first, then you'll be better able to help your brother. Is Jesus telling us not to judge here? No, he's telling us to take the speck out of our brother's eye. That involves making a judgment. He's simply saying, get the log out of your own eye first, or get the problem out of your own life first, so you can better help your brother. So this is not a command not to judge. It is a command on how to judge. In other words, don't judge hypocritically. If you've got that problem in your life, get it out of your life first, and then you'll be better able to help your brother. But it would be complete suicide to say don't make judgments. Everybody makes judgments. You make judgments. I make judgments. Atheists make judgments. Agnostics make judgments. Muslims make judgments. Everybody makes judgments. The only question is, are your judgments true? Which is, of course, why Jesus in John 7:24 said, stop judging by mere appearances and make a right judgment. You have to make judgments. What you don't want to do, though, is be judgmental. And Jesus went after the judgmental people. Who were they? Well, they were the Pharisees. Well, who were they? They were the religious and political leaders of Israel. And Jesus went after them. And when he went after them, he wasn't always so nice doing it. Are you telling me Jesus got involved in politics? Of course! He went after the political leaders of Israel. The Romans delegated most of the authority to run Israel to the Sanhedrin. That's where the Pharisees and Sadducees were, and Jesus excoriated them. In fact, if you think, well, how many times you've heard this? You may have heard people say, oh, that person is such a saint. He's never said a bad word about anyone. Well, if that's the definition of a saint, Jesus was no saint. If you don't think so, you just need to read Matthew chapter 23. What does Jesus say in Matthew chapter 23? Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Oh, you look great on the outside. You're whitewashed tombs, but on the inside, you're full of dead men's bones. You go a mile to make a convert, and then once you make them a convert, you make them twice as much a son of hell as you are. How will you avoid them to hell? What? Sweet and gentle Jesus said this? Yes, Jesus was not Barney, okay? He was not Mr. Rogers. Jesus was tough when he needed to be tough. Oh, many times he was very kind and sweet, but other times he was direct and, quite frankly, in people's faces. So we shouldn't buy into the feminized Jesus, the sissified Jesus. Jesus told it like it was, and sometimes we need to tell it like it is as well. In fact, if you don't tell somebody like it is, you might be enabling them to do something that's wrong and hurtful to themselves and others. So we've got to tell the truth. But don't buy into this idea that you can't make judgments. You want to make judgments without being judgmental. In fact, you know what evangelism is, friends? It's just one beggar showing another beggar where the food is. That's what it's all about. Frank Turek filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. Our phone number today, if you want to be on the program, is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-TRUTH. Let me squeeze in a quick call here. We'll start with Benyam in Alexandria, Virginia. Listen on WAVA. Go ahead, Benyam. Did I get the name right, by the way? Can you hear me? Hello? Joey, for some reason, I don't have him in my headset. All right, we'll put him on hold for a minute. I don't know what happened there, but I couldn't hear him. He was there, apparently, but he didn't pick up. So let me keep moving here. We're talking about Christianity being true, and what evidence do we have for it? Well, let me point out that the first question we're answering is, does truth exist? And quite obviously it does, because any claim to say it doesn't is a truth claim itself. So relativism and postmodernism are false. They can't be true, because they defeat themselves. It's like saying, I can't speak a word in English. You're using English to say it. That's what relativism is. There are no absolute truths is an absolute truth claim itself. Okay? So you can't get away from this. Now, there is truth out there. The problem is many of us don't like it. In fact, Pascal put it this way. People almost invariably arrive at their beliefs, not on the basis of proof, but on the basis of what they find attractive. In other words, a lot of people believe what they want to believe just because they want to believe it, not because they have evidence for it. In fact, many atheists have admitted this. Thomas Nagel, who teaches at NYU, said, it's not just that I don't believe in God. He said, I don't want there to be a God. I don't want the universe to be that way. Christopher Hitchens, whom I've had the opportunity to debate a couple of times, and by the way, you can see the debates on our website for free, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. He says, now I'm not an atheist, or he did. Tragically, he died a couple of years ago. He said, I'm not an atheist. I'm an anti-theist. In other words, it's not just I don't believe in God. I'm against God. I don't want there to be a God. And why? Why would people not want there to be a God? Well, quite frequently, the elephant in the room is not evidence. The elephant in the room is morality and accountability. A lot of times people are not Christians because they don't want to be Christians. Paul talks about this in Romans chapter 1, that we suppress the truth and unrighteousness because we want to go our own way. So here's a question you ought to ask people who are not Christians, and maybe there's some you're not a Christian right now. You're out there listening. Ask yourself this question and try and be as honest as you can. If Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? If you hesitate at all, or the answer is no, then evidence isn't the problem. The issue isn't evidence. The issue is you don't want it to be true. Now, let me be very quick to point out that this sword cuts both ways, because a lot of Christians are Christians just because they want to be Christians, not because they have evidence for it, but because they want there to be, they want Christianity to be true. But if you ask them, like the girl I talked about at the very top of the program, if you ask them, why is Christianity true? They couldn't give you an answer. They couldn't give you a reason. Now, thankfully, I think there's very good evidence that Christianity is indeed true. That's what we're talking about here today. And for those of you that are not going to be able to listen to the whole program, if you want to get a recording of the entire two-hour program, you can today. We're making it available to you, this program and our book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. You'll get the program on CD. You'll get the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, if you call 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. For $20 donation, you're going to get the book, the CD, the whole deal. 1-800-278-9978. And I'm filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown today. My name is Frank Turek. And our website, if you want more on that, is crossexamined.org. Back in just a couple of minutes.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's actually Dr. Frank Turek filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown, who is on an evangelical mission in China as we speak. And I think he's going to actually do the program live from China tomorrow. So you'll want to tune in for that and get the update from Mike as to what's going on out there in China. I'm Frank Turek filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. And our website is crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with the D on the end of it, .org. And I got to tell you guys about an app that we just put out that has a quick answer section in it. The app is the Cross Examined app. It's free. If you go to the App Store or you go to our website, crossexamined.org, it works on iPad, iPhone, Android devices. And the quick answer section of the app is designed so that you might be in a conversation with somebody over lunch and they say something to you that you think you don't quite know how to answer. If you click on your iPhone and go to the Cross Examined app and click on the quick answer section, you're going to get a number of questions and the answers right there for you. So they may bring up an objection or a question you don't know how to answer, but you have an answer right there on your phone. Check it out. It's only been out a couple of months, 2-3 months. We've already have over 11,000 downloads of this app. You're going to like the app. I guarantee it. Check it out. All the data we're talking about today, much of it, not all of it, but much of it is on this app. So we're talking about truth on the app. We're talking about the existence of God. We're talking about miracles. We're talking about the New Testament and the Bible being true. And we're talking about a series of objections, like evolution, if God, why evil, ethical questions, and even questions about eternity, like, will God send me to hell just because I don't believe in Jesus? And, you know, why is he creating people who he knows are going to go to hell? Questions like that are questions like are the kinds of questions that are in the app. So check that out. And again, the app is the Cross Examined app. If you go to the App Store and type in two words, Cross Examined, you will find it. Let me squeeze a call in here. We will try Benyam again in Alexandria, Virginia. Listen on WAVA. We just got a couple minutes before the break. Benyam, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Go ahead, sir. What's your question?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions, but I just want to stick with one of the questions that I have.
Yes, sir.
My question is, why are we trying to provide evidence about God's existence? I personally believe... Okay, you want me to repeat the question?
No, I got it. It's a good question.
Okay.
For two reasons.
Okay.
Let me give you a quick answer here, and then we'll expound upon it after the break. For two reasons. First reason is reason demands it, and number two, the Bible commands it. I mean, reason demands it. You should believe something only if it's true, and you should have evidence if you're going to believe something like, does God exist, or if you're going to believe in God, you ought to have evidence that it's true. And of course, if you're a Christian, the Bible actually commands us to get evidence that Christianity is true. I mentioned some of the verses at the top of the show. Always ready to give an answer for the hope that you have. 1 Peter 3:15, 2 Corinthians 10:5, demolish arguments and take every thought captive to Christ. Paul also says, test all things. John, of course, writes, these things were written down so that you may believe. In other words, he's saying, here's some evidence so that you may believe. So not only reasonable, it's also biblical.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is, you know, I personally believe in God's existence because I experienced him in my own way until I cannot even deny his existence. But what I'm saying is God is a spirit. He's invisible. He's intangible. And people might not be able to have real evidence of his existence because God is beyond our mind and imagination. And I will
even... Okay. We're coming up to the break, and I'll hold you through the break if you like, Benyam. Okay. Yeah, hold on. But the point here is that, yes, we don't know God directly because he's an immaterial being. We don't know him directly now. We will know him on the other side. What we know God by his effects. There's a creation, so there must be a creator. There's a conscience, so there must be a moral lawgiver. If we see a miracle, there must be a cause for that miracle. So we know God by his effects, not directly. More after the break. I'm Frank Turek, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. Back in two.
In It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's Frank Turek with you, Dr. Michael Brown in China, but he'll be back tomorrow to give you an update from China, so you don't want to miss that. We're talking about the evidence for the existence of God, the evidence for Christianity. I co-wrote a book with Dr. Norman Geisler called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. And so that's what we're talking about today, the evidence for Christianity. We were talking to Benyam before we the break. I'll bring him back on. Benyam, yes, go ahead.
Okay. My question was, as I said, I thought it would be so hard for believers to provide any evidence about God's existence, since God is spirit. And we live in a material world, so that we will be so limited to bring anything material or something that reveals God's existence.
Well, the question, though, is, Benyam, who created material and who's holding material together right now?
It must be God.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the evidence points to. The evidence points to the fact, and now we're getting into the second question I talked about earlier, does God exist? One primary evidence that God actually exists is that space, time, and matter had a beginning out of nothing. Once there was no space, once there was no time, once there was no matter, there was no space, time, or matter, and then the entire space-time continuum exploded into being out of absolutely nothing, which points to the fact that the cause of the space-time continuum can't be made of space-time and matter or matter. In other words, it must be spaceless, timeless, immaterial, and also powerful to create the universe out of nothing. And that's exactly what we mean by God. So yes, God is a spirit, but that doesn't mean he hasn't left any effects. One of the effects he's left is the entire universe. And of course, the fact that this universe is being held together right now also points to the fact that we don't just have a beginning cause, we have a sustaining cause. And this is why the scripture talks about in him we live and move and have our being, and through him all things were created and all things hold together. God creates the universe and holds it together right now. So I agree with you. That there is evidence that God exists. I think, you know, you're not going to get evidence that you're going to actually see an invisible being. But when God adds humanity over his deity and comes to earth in the perfect God-man Jesus, then you do see a physical representation of God in human flesh. So that's what Jesus actually did.
Yeah. Okay, can I just ask the other question, please?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Okay, the other question is, what happened to those teachers who turned out to be atheists after they spent, you know, maybe 10 years, 15 years in the Bible school, then finally they said that they become atheists. What's up with the word of God?
There's nothing up with the word of God, but there is certainly free will out there, and a lot of people.
What I'm saying is, the nature of the word was, you know, it is very sharp, like a sword that penetrates soul and spirit, even flesh.
Yes.
And if they just read the Bible, if they just teach the Bible, if they know the, if they have a biblical knowledge, the word itself was supposed to change their life if they know it fully.
But Benyam, only if they're open to it. You remember, take Caiaphas, for example. Caiaphas actually sees Jesus do miracles, and the other priests there see Jesus do miracles, and they say in John chapter 11, they actually see Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead. And then what do they wind up doing? They don't say, oh, he's the Messiah, let's bow down and worship him. They want to kill him and then kill Lazarus too. See, just because God displays his miraculous power doesn't mean people are going to believe in him. In fact, it's commonly thought that if God would just show me a miracle, I'd believe. No, you wouldn't. If you don't believe already, you're not going to believe now. As Jesus said in Luke chapter 16, when the rich man is in hell and he's in Hades, and he warns, he says, oh, go tell my brothers not to come to this place of torment. And Jesus says, look, they got Moses and the prophets. If they don't believe them, they won't even believe if somebody rises from the dead. It's what I mentioned before, Benyam. The issue is not evidence for a lot of people. The issue is morality and accountability. They don't want Christianity to be true, and that's why they're not Christians. Thanks for the call, though. Let me move on to Beth in Washington, D.C., also at AVA. Beth, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, ma'am.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful show, and every day, and today is no exception. And thank you all for the app. That is, It's time. It's time.
You got the app already, Beth? You already got the app?
No, you know what? I don't even need to have it to know how valuable it's going to be.
Right.
I'm going to be getting it. You used the term feminized in connection with a foster Jesus, and I have a problem with that, only that it kind of reduces the credibility of a woman doing apology. And we're all to be doing apologetics, and we're not to be doing it soft, but we're also not to beat people over the head with it, of course.
That's true.
It's just that word really doesn't apply to that. There might be better terminology that would not kind of take away from the credibility of a woman being.
I don't mean to take away the credibility. Yeah, no. I don't mean to take away the credibility. Yeah, yeah.
But the word does it. The word tends to that.
What word would you rather me use? Because I'm open to anything.
Good question. I didn't stop to think that part through. Not that word.
All right. I'll be happy I'll be happy to change the word, but you know the point I'm trying to make here. I'm trying to make
I would prefer, because it does reduce the credibility. It isn't a personal thing. It isn't a feminist thing.
Right.
It's you know, I hear that used periodically for that same purpose, and and it weakens a woman speaking with the firmness of the Word of God in people's minds. It just kind of creates, you know, our language helps to create our reality.
Well, a lot of people, unfortunately, that's true, but language doesn't create reality. It shouldn't, but I see what you're saying, that if you can't control the language, then you can control what people think about things.
That's right. That's
true.
Right.
It shouldn't be that way, but it is, yeah.
I know,
yeah, absolutely.
And I would have to think through what other, you know, what alternative terminology. I will have to do that. But words are not coming at the moment for that.
That's all right. So we're on the radio. You know what happens when you're on the radio? Everyone's IQ drops at least 10 points. Mine drops 20. Because when you're on the radio, you just can't think of stuff, you know?
I'm telling you, this is the first time I've called in any show. So this
really?
Is really, yes. But it just seems so important, and I needed also to say your show is one of those watchwords of my life. So I am so grateful. And
well,
do you
listen to the Line of Fire a lot?
I listen as often as I possibly can.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
And this is just a sidebar, but I was born in China, so that Michael Brown is in China makes me excited.
Oh, very good. Well, thank you, Beth, and thanks for being a light there in our nation's capital. Do you know that the Redskins are going to change their name? Did you hear about that?
I am so pleased if that's the truth.
Yeah, they're going to get rid of Washington. They're going to get rid of Washington.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the offensive part, Beth.
I should have expected that. Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much. God bless you. I appreciate it. Yeah, they're going to get rid of Washington. That's the offensive part. The Redskin thing, that's fine. It's the Washington part that's embarrassing at this point. Anyway. You're listening to Frank Turk filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. Gee, I hope I'm not driving off listeners by using the wrong words here. And by the way, you know, you guys listen to The Line of Fire. It's a great show. You know it. Wouldn't it be great if Dr. Brown were to come back from China with a whole new slew of torchbearers? You know what a torchbearer is? Somebody who supports the program. This is listener-supported radio. And Dr. Brown is going to release a special print version of his new book called Authentic Fire, a response to John MacArthur's Strange Fire. This book's only going to be sold through the program here, through Ask Dr. Brown Ministries. And so if you stand with us as a new torchbearer, Dr. Brown will send you a signed copy of Authentic Fire. It's going to come out sometime in December. If you want to get that, or you want to get the I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist book along with the DVD of this entire program, all you need to do is call 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or you can order online. You go to AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. So 1-800-278-9978. If you want to join the program here and talk to me, this crazy guy filling in for Dr. Brown, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Now, we got off talking about the second question, does God exist? And I gave you some brief evidence that the universe had a beginning. That's the cosmological argument. That's what it's called. And cosmological comes from the Greek word cosmos, which means world or universe. The universe had a beginning. If it had a beginning, it must have had a beginner. We go through all this evidence in the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, which, by the way, makes for a great Christmas gift, friends. We're about a month away. Why not give truth to people? Rather than another tie or whatever. Give them I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, or give them Dr. Brown's new book, Authentic Fire. Get them something that's going to be spiritual and fit the meaning of the season. Now, the second argument for God is the argument that the universe is designed and so is life. In fact, the universe is highly fine-tuned. If you were to change any one of a number of factors infinitesimally about the universe, we wouldn't be here. The universe wouldn't even be here. In fact, Stephen Hawking, the great atheist, said, he said, if the expansion rate of the universe was different by one part in a thousand million million a second after the Big Bang, the universe would have collapsed back on itself or never developed galaxies. Think about that. Somebody designed this universe to be here. I'm Frank Turek, back in 2 minutes. Don't go away.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's Dr. Frank Turek with you, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Brown on assignment in China. He'll give you an update tomorrow right here on The Line of Fire. You won't want to miss it. We're talking about evidence for Christianity. I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist is a book I co-wrote with Dr. Norman Geiser. We're making that available to you as well as this program on CD if you call in for a gift of $20 at 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Let me get back to the phone lines, and we will go to Hans listening in Westchester, New York, probably on the great WYMCA. Is that true, Hans?
Yes, it is.
You know, I grew up with that station. I grew up in New Jersey. Can you tell? Forgot about it. But go ahead, sir.
My question is, or my comment is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but an evidence for the Bible would be that there are over 20,000 manuscripts pertaining to the truth of the gospel written within 70 years of Christ's death. And quite often, so many colleges will quote people like Plato, who only have a couple of hundred of manuscripts that are hundreds of years after the fact.
Let me just correct one little thing you mentioned there, Hans, because it is true that there are, well, first of all, there's about 6,000 Greek manuscripts, but when you add in the other languages like Syriac, Coptic, and Latin, those types, then you get over 20,000, but they're not all within 70 years of Jesus' death. In fact, the earliest one we have is about from 114 A.D., although there's one that is about to be announced that is actually from 85 A.D., so it's in the first century. I think it's a small segment of the Gospel of Mark. But no, they're not all written within 70 years of Jesus' life. What I think is written within 70, in fact, what I think is written prior to 70 A.D., which is within 40 years of Jesus' life, is the entire Bible. Maybe Revelation is written later, but just about every book in the New Testament is written prior to 70 A.D., and there's a number of reasons for that we talk about, and I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. But not all the manuscripts have survived. In other words, the originals haven't survived, but the way we figure out what the original said is we compare all the copies that were spread around the ancient world, and when you compare all the copies, we can reconstruct the original with 99.5% accuracy. And but no, we don't have 20,000 manuscripts within 70 years of Jesus's life. We have all the documents, the original documents written prior to 70 A.D. Does that make sense?
Okay. Is the sheer number alone enough reason for us to put that out there as compared to the people that they know about in colleges, such as Plato? And correct me if I'm wrong here as well. I mean, is Plato and the manuscripts written from him written hundreds and hundreds of years after the fact with only, you know, a couple of hundred of them?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We have a chart in our book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, which goes into this, that the skeptics have no trouble saying that what Plato wrote, we know what Plato wrote, or we know what Homer wrote, or some of these other ancient writers many fewer manuscripts. Now, actually, in recent times, we've been finding a lot more Homer, the Iliad manuscripts. We're up to about 2,000 of those now. But still, those are 400 or 500 years after the original, at the earliest, if not greater. In other words, there's a greater gap between the original writing and the first copy we have, whereas in the New Testament, there's hardly any gap at all. If the 85 AD manuscript is correct, it's within 30 years of Mark writing it, maybe 40 years at the latest. So it's very, very early. Whereas the other writings from other ancient writers survive on far fewer copies, and there's a greater gap in the number of years between when the original was written and the first copy we have. So yes, the New Testament is highly authenticated. In other words, the text of the current New Testament, we know beyond any reasonable doubt, is the one they originally wrote down. But I think the more important question is, did what they write down, is that really true, Hans? You know, that's the more important question. We know what they wrote down. The question is it true? And for that, you need to get into more evidence.
Right, right. So therefore, the dilution of whatever we are writing down, whether it's the Gospels or Homer or Plato, is so important, particularly if it's within the first generation, as it were, of the person's death. You know, as time goes on, obviously those things can be diluted more and more, and stories and different things can be put in there that change the facts. And I believe that the authenticity of any manuscript is going to be more authentic if it's closer to those dates. So
thank you
for clarifying that. I appreciate it.
Yes. No, I appreciate the call, Hans. It's a good insight, because a lot of people don't realize the wealth of manuscript evidence. In fact, Dan Wallace, who's really probably the world's leading expert on manuscripts right now, particularly when it comes to the New Testament, he teaches down at Dallas Theological Seminary. He says we have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to the New Testament documents. I mean, there's just so many documents out there that we know exist and allow us to reconstruct the original with virtual certainty, that there's no other document from the ancient world like this. We know what the New Testament writers wrote down. The question is, did they write down the truth? And that's what we're going to talk about the rest of the show. Thanks for the call, Hans, from the great WYMCA up there in New York City. You're listening to The Line of Fire with Dr. Michael Brown, except my name's Frank Turek, filling in for Michael Brown, who's on assignment right now in China, and he'll give you an update on what's going on there tomorrow. Let me mention one other argument for the existence of God I didn't have time to get into, and that is the moral argument for the existence of God. And the moral argument says if there's one thing morally wrong out there, just one, like it's wrong to torture babies for fun, or it's wrong to murder 6 million Jews in a Holocaust, then there has to be a God. Why? Because if there is no God, if we're all just molecules in motion, then if you think murdering Jews is wrong, but Hitler doesn't, well, that's all just a matter of opinion, right? If there's no standard beyond humanity, if there's no authority beyond humanity, then all we have are human opinions. But we all intuitively understand that there really is something objectively morally wrong about murdering Jews or murdering anyone. There's something objectively morally wrong about torturing a baby for fun. If that's the case, then there must be an objective moral lawgiver. There must be an object, an authoritative object, a personal object, which we call God, his very nature, which establishes right from wrong. Any deviation from his nature is wrong. And murdering innocent people is wrong. If there is no such being, then nothing is ultimately right or wrong. But everybody understands there is something really right and there is something really wrong. If that's the case, God exists. I mean, if you have a moral law, you must have a moral lawgiver. You don't get a moral law unless there's a moral lawgiver. You don't get a moral prescription unless there's a prescriber. I mean, suppose you go to the drugstore with a prescription, you hand it to the pharmacist and you say, I'd like this filled. And he says, who prescribed this? And you go, nobody. Are you going to get the prescription? Are you going to get the medicine? No. Every prescription must have a prescriber. And if there is a moral law prescription on humanity, then there must be a moral law prescriber. That's exactly what we mean by God. I'm Frank Turek, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. Check us out on the website, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. Back in just a few minutes.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown still here in China, but excited to introduce a very special guest host to you, Dr. Frank Turek, author, apologist, and oh, this guy's on the campuses, he's doing it on the front lines, and he doesn't have enough faith to be an atheist.
No, I don't. Thanks, Dr. Brown, for that intro. All the way from China, my name is Frank Turek, co-author of I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. And I want to talk about the evidence for Christianity today. I started off last hour, and many of you don't get both hours of The Line of Fire. Why not? You need to get both hours. If you don't get both hours, fine, you can get the DVD, or I'm sure the CD, I should say, of this particular broadcast. We'll tell you about that later. But we're talking about evidence for Christianity. We talked about at the top of the last hour, does truth exist? Does God exist? Are miracles possible? Is the New Testament true? Those are the questions we're dealing with today, because if you answer yes to the question, does truth exist, to the question, does God exist, are miracles possible, and is the New Testament true, then Christianity necessarily follows. And we already gave evidence that truth exists. We've already given some evidence that God exists. In fact, let's just review briefly some of the evidence for God. We talked about the beginning of the universe, that the universe exploded into being out of nothing. If that's the case, then the cause of the universe, if space, matter, and time were created, must be spaceless, timeless, and immaterial, and also powerful to create the universe out of nothing. Also personal, in order to decide to create, because impersonal forces don't decide to do anything. Only persons make decisions. And to go from a state of nothingness to a state of creation, someone had to make a choice. So you've got a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, personal creator, just from what is called the cosmological argument, the Big Bang evidence for the existence of God. That the universe had a beginning, it must have had a beginner. We also mentioned briefly that the universe is highly designed, that if you were to change any one of a number of factors about the universe, we wouldn't be here. Somebody must have designed it. In fact, let me just give you one other fact. I mentioned the expansion rate of the universe. Let's talk about the gravitational force, how highly fine-tuned the gravitational force is. If the gravitational force were not fine-tuned to 1 part in 10 to the 40, we wouldn't be here. What's 1 part in 10 to the 40? That's 1 part in 1 with 40 zeros following it. You say, Frank, I can't get my head around that number. I know, neither can I. Let me give you an illustration. Take a tape measure and stretch it across the entire known universe. Now, that's a long way. Set the gravitational force at a particular inch mark on that tape measure. I know gravity is not measured in inches. This is just to give you a scale idea in your mind. If you were to move the strength of gravity 1 inch in either direction, we wouldn't be here. That's how highly fine-tuned the gravitational force is. That's 1 in 10 to the 40 precision. I don't have enough faith to believe that that just happened by chance. There's a mind behind this universe. Somebody put it right there. And it seems to me that somebody's the same somebody who created the universe out of nothing. So now you've got a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, personal, intelligent first cause. When you add the moral argument to it, I just mentioned that a minute ago before the break. For those of you that don't get this program, again, you'll be able to get it here. I'll tell you how in a minute. If there's a moral law out there, there must be a moral lawgiver. I mean, if there's one thing morally wrong out there, like it's wrong to torture babies for fun, if that's true, if it's wrong to torture babies for fun, there has to be a moral lawgiver. God must exist. Why? Because if God doesn't exist, then that's just your opinion. It's not really wrong. Well, we all know it's wrong. If that's the case, God exists. So now you've got a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, moral, personal, intelligent creator. Now, these arguments, which are called the cosmological argument from the beginning of the universe, the teleological argument for the design of the universe, and the moral argument are taught in the Bible, but you don't need the Bible to know them. More on this in just 2 minutes. I'm Frank Turek. See you in two.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Frank Turek with you, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Brown in China. We'll give you an update tomorrow on the program, so you don't want to miss that. If you want to join our discussion today, we're talking about evidence for Christianity, our book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, and our number, if you want to join the program, is 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH or 866-348-7884 if you want to be on the program today. I talked just before the break about the existence of God. You can get the existence of God from just three arguments, the cosmological, teleological, and moral arguments. Again, those arguments are taught in the Bible, but you don't need the Bible to know them. From those arguments, you can see that the theistic God exists, that a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, moral, personal, intelligent creator exists. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that Christianity is true at this point. Why? Because all we have at this point is a theistic God. We don't know if this God is Allah. We don't know if this God is the God of the Bible or some other theistic God. All we know is it seems we have a theistic God. So the first question I mentioned is, does truth exist? The second question is, does God exist? These are the questions you need to answer to show that Christianity is true. The third question is, are miracles possible? And a lot of people have trouble with miracles. They think miracles can't occur. They've never seen a miracle, so they just say, hey, miracles don't occur. Well, the problem is when people say miracles don't occur, they're not really thinking about all the evidence out there. And let me just ask you this. What is the greatest miracle in the Bible? You know, a lot of people will say, of course, well, the resurrection. That's the capstone miracle in the Bible, particularly the New Testament. Of course it is, but it's not a difficult miracle. Not for a God. Why? It's not the greatest miracle. I mean, it's a great miracle, but it's not the greatest miracle. What is the greatest miracle? Is it the resurrection? When I do this before college audiences or church audiences, people yell out, oh, the incarnation, or the virgin birth, or, you know, the substitutionary atonement, or turning water into wine. No, they're all easy compared to the greatest miracle. The greatest miracle in the Bible is the first verse. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. If that verse is true, every other verse is at least possible. Why? I mean, if it's true that God can create the heavens and the earth out of nothing, can he do whatever he wants that's not logically impossible inside the heavens and the earth? I mean, if he can create the whole show out of nothing, can he raise Jesus from the dead? Of course. Can he keep Jonah alive in a fish for 3 days? Of course. Can he do the Noah miracle? Of course. Can he part the Red Sea? Of course. He can do whatever he wants that's not logically impossible if God can create the entire universe out of nothing. Now, here's the interesting thing, friends. We now have evidence that the first verse of the Bible is indeed true, that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It's called the Big Bang evidence for the existence of God. That's just one line of evidence, scientific evidence. We have it all listed in chapter 3 of I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, the evidence that the universe had a beginning. Sometimes people call it the Big Bang. A lot of Christians are afraid of the Big Bang. Oh, we don't believe in the Big Bang. Look, I believe in the Big Bang. I just know who banged it. Okay, the evidence for the Big Bang is indeed quite good. You even have atheistic scientists saying this, like Stephen Hawking saying almost everyone now believes that time, space, and matter had a beginning at the Big Bang. Now, Hawking tries to come up with another explanation as to what caused this Big Bang, but even he admits the evidence that space, matter, and time had a beginning. Hawking's explanation doesn't work. He tries to say gravity created the universe. Well, first of all, gravity can't create anything. Gravity just does the same thing over and over again. And B, gravity didn't exist prior to the Big Bang, ontologically prior. There was no space, matter, or time. There was no gravity. So whatever created the universe, it wasn't gravity. It had to be a personal choice, or it had to be a person who could make a personal choice to go from a state of nothingness to a state of existence. And that's what God did. So if the first verse of the Bible is true, every other verse is at least believable. God can do whatever he wants. It's not logically impossible inside the universe if he can create the whole universe out of nothing. Now, I know you're probably thinking, well, what's this logically impossible stuff? I thought God can do anything. No, there's even some things God can't do. Like what? Like he can't create a square circle. There's no such thing, right? It's logically contradictory. He can't create a one-ended stick. There's no such thing, right? It's contradictory. He can't create a married bachelor. There's no such thing. It's contradictory. He can't create an honest politician. Yeah, there's some things God, even God can't do. And those of you listen up in Washington, you know what I'm saying. Some things are too hard for God even. In fact, you can do some things God can't do. Like what? Well, you can change. God can't change. He's already perfect. What's he going to change to? Imperfection? You can lie. God can't lie. He wouldn't be God. He wouldn't be the standard of truth if he could lie. There'd be a standard beyond him, which would mean that would be God. In fact, if he could do those things, he wouldn't be God. So, look, the first verse of the Bible is true. And since that's true, maybe the other verses are true as well. So not only are miracles possible, the greatest miracle has already occurred, the creation of the universe out of nothing. So when people say to me, look, I don't believe in miracles, I always say, hey, look around, pal, you're living in one. The whole universe is a miracle. So the question now is, have any other miracles occurred? And that's for that, we have to get to the fourth question I mentioned earlier, is the New Testament true? So remember, the four questions, and this is all in our book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. And by the way, if you want to get the book, you can get the book today and a CD of this entire program. All you need to do is call 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978, or you can order it online. And it's for a $20 donation. You'll get the book and the CD. I keep trying to say DVD. The CD of this program, the whole 2 hours. Some of you only get a half hour of this show, The Line of Fire. Some of you get all two. Some of you get one. You're going to get the whole deal. And if you're just coming in right now and you missed all the evidence we talked about before, just get the CD. It's part of the $20 donation that you can give. Again, 1-800-278-9978. My name's Frank Turek, filling in for the great Michael Brown. Before we get to the fourth question, is the New Testament true? Let's take a phone call or two. And if you want to join the program for a phone call, it's 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-TRUTH. We'll go to Gabriel in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he's on hold right now, isn't he? Gabriel was there, but he's not there anymore. So see if you can get him again, Joey. I don't know what happened to him. I thought he was there, but he's not there at all. He's gone. Well, he doesn't have the patience of Job, apparently. He was on hold for a while. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-TRUTH, if you'd like to join the program. What evidence do we have, by the way? Wait, before we go, before we look in the New Testament. I mentioned this in the first hour. I got to mention it again. How many times you sit across from somebody, if you're a Christian, and you go, they say something, and you go, I don't know how to answer that. That's an objection to Christianity. I don't know what to say. Well, you don't have to have it all memorized anymore. You can get our new app, the Cross-Examined app. Two words, cross-examined. You can get it at the App Store, or you can go to our website, crossexamined.org. That's all one word, crossexamined.org, and click on media. You'll see the app there. It's good for iPhone, iPad, Droid, and the quick answer section has quick answers to some of the most prominent objections you're going to get, like some of the things we talked about earlier. People say all truth is relative, or there is no truth, or it's true for you but not for me, or all truth comes from science, or you ought not judge, all those kind of claims. And then you get claims, oh, well, you know, there's no evidence for God, or you know, your moral argument's flawed because atheists know morality. All the answers to these objections are in the app. Even answers to if God, why evil? And why did God kill the Canaanites? And doesn't the Bible condone slavery and all these things? It's all in the app. You need to get the app. Short answers. And in certain instances, we have links to longer articles and even videos. So again, the app is free. It's the Cross-Examined app. You need to download it. You can go to our website, crossexamined.org, or go to the App Store and get it there. And by the way, in this app, too, I do a radio program every Saturday morning on the AFA radio network. And Dr. Brown's show is on there as well on occasion. And all of our podcasts, including some of my all the interviews, I've interviewed Dr. Brown on our show, is right on this app as well. And you can sort these podcasts by topic, date, and guest. So if you're looking for a particular guest or a particular topic, it's right there on the app. Go download it. It's there for free. All right, let me go to, let's see, is it Bijou? Did I get the name right, Bijou?
Yes, that's right.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, good. Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I watched your debate with Christopher Dixon, and I think a few other times I watched you, lecturing comments, a few comments. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Bijou. Hey, by the way, are you on a speakerphone right now? Because you're very hard to hear.
Oh, okay. I'm on speakerphone. I can just say that. Sorry about that. Hold on one second.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm not on speakerphone.
All right. Well, go ahead. We got just about a minute before the break. I'll hold you through if I can't get back to your question. Go right ahead.
Okay. My question is why there are so many galaxies. This is not a new question that I'm putting out there. It's out there, but I'm trying to rephrase it in a different way. Well, if God help us with one...
Excellent question, Bijou. Hold on. We're going to come right back with an answer to that. I'm Frank Turek, in for Michael Brown, back in 2 minutes.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's Frank Turek with you, Dr. Michael Brown, on assignment in China, evangelizing China right now. He'll have a report on this program tomorrow, so you don't want to miss it. We're talking about I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist today, a book I co-wrote with Dr. Norman Geisler. And we had Bijou on the line asking the question, why are there so many galaxies? So let me bring him back on. Yeah, it's a good question. Why are there so many galaxies? I know one reason is because the heavens declare the glory of God, Bijou. And if the heavens, if you looked up and the heavens ended at the cloud tops, you wouldn't get the sense that God is any big deal. But when you look out at thousands of galaxies, millions of galaxies, and you realize, according to some estimates, that the number of stars that are out there are about equivalent to the number of grains of sand on all the beaches on all the earth, you get an idea of the awesome majesty of God. In fact, Psalm 103, verse 11 says, God's love to those that fear him exceeds the height of the heavens above the earth. Well, how high are the heavens above the earth? When you've got stars equivalent to grains of sand on all the beaches on all the earth, you realize that from our perspective, it's virtually infinite. Well, that's the idea. In order to communicate infinity through finite things, God made a universe that is so incredibly large to basically declare his majesty. The heavens declare the glory of God. The stars are crying out that there is a creator. And, you know, there's some technical scientific reasons why the universe is so big as well. And Dr. Hugh Ross, who teaches at a website called Reasons to Believe, if you go to reasons.org, you'll be able to type in your question directly there. And he'll give you some of the more technical reasons. In fact, he wrote a book called Why the Universe is the Way It Is. It turns out that these galaxies and all the space out there is necessary for us to exist here on Earth.
Hello.
Yes.
I think I asked the same question to Dr. Gerard, and he said he's going to send me that book, and I'm waiting for that book. Thank you for taking my call. I bet my question was, essentially to, is there any possibility that in other galaxies there are, Earth-like planets surrounding, evolving around a star like our sun, that could possibly hold some life?
Yes, I think it certainly is possible, but I don't think that would affect whether or not Christianity is true or not. I mean, if God has other creations elsewhere, that's up to him. But, yeah, it certainly is possible. I mean, there's so many stars out there, I would think it would be probable. Although I will say this, that many scientists who study this say the likelihood of so many stars, or I should say the likelihood of life being out there, is actually pretty remote, many scientists say. In fact, a number of scientists, and they were atheists.
Remote, what do you mean?
Ward and Brownlee wrote a book, this is going back 15 or 20 years, called Rare Earth, Why Complex Life is Uncommon in the Universe. I'm looking at it right now. It's on my shelf. And they give their reasons in there. But that might change. You don't know. The more we learn, maybe we'll realize that there might be life out there. But that, you know, that wouldn't change Christianity at all.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Bijou. Let me go back to Gabriel, who called back. Gabriel, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, how are you?
Hey, sorry I missed you, man. What's going on?
That's okay. That's good. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. And but you guys had mentioned evidence about Christian and Christianity. I think if it hasn't been established yet, I think it's important to establish that the Bible says that there's only one type of Christianity, which is the born-again Christianity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important because its words, the term born-again has a very negative connotation to it, mm-hmm. to the world. You know, mm-hmm. you're one of those born-again
right.
Christians. But Jesus uses the term with Nicodemus in chapter 3.
He does. Yeah, it's amazing I'm one of the Christians who actually believes it's true.
Yeah.
Imagine that. What am I, crazy?
I mean, even within evangelical circles, sometimes they're afraid to use that term, a born-again Christian. They say they're Christians.
Right.
But are they born-again Christians?
Right.
That's just my point, you know.
Yeah, well, no, I agree that Paul, in fact, Jesus says this. He says, many of you who are going to say to me, well, Lord, didn't I do this in your name and didn't I do
right.
that in your name? And he's going to say, away from you, I never knew you.
Right.
Meaning that they never really gave their heart to Christ. In fact, Jesus went after people who thought they were close to God. In fact, those were the people he went after the most, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the people
right.
who thought they were close to God, but they really weren't because they
right.
they were really in it for themselves. They weren't in it to try and know God for who he is. And that's why we're here, to know God and to make him known. That's the reason for it.
Why do you think a lot of evangelicals don't like to use that term?
Well, there's a lot of people that just want to shy away from controversy. I mean, mm-hmm. if the evangelical church was really the church, our culture would be in much better shape. But we'd rather yeah. just keep our heads down rather than bravely say, I stand with him because he died for me. But
right.
we don't want to do that. We want to be comfortable and not have anybody call us names or not persecute us at all. But Paul, of course, says anybody who lives a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to avoid all that. I'm not saying
right.
you have to unnecessarily go in and, you know, be a bull in a china shop. I'm not saying
right.
that. But
right.
I am saying that you should stand for the truth. And we don't want to do that. We want to keep everything comfortable.
Yeah, I think the emphasis, unfortunately, is just to be complacent and please a lot of mm-hmm. people
mm-hmm.
and water down the gospel, basically.
That's true. And, you know,
so people are attracted to it. I was like, oh, really? Okay, that sounds good to me. I'm doing this anyway. So it sounds like I'm saved. It sounds like I'm a Christian because I'm doing the things that you're talking about.
Yeah, they got
when you bring into the conversation the reality of what sin really is and mm-hmm. how we're in trouble. We're in big trouble.
That's why Christ had to come. Yeah, that's why he had to come.
Exactly.
If we didn't have sin, he wouldn't have had to come. And if you could get
exactly.
to Christ by any other way, or if you could get to heaven by any other way, why would God send his only son to die a brutal death if you could get
yeah.
to heaven by quote-unquote being good, whatever that means?
You know, right.
there would be no need for that. That's why Paul says in Galatians chapter 2, he said, I do not set aside the righteousness of the law, because if you could attain righteousness through the law, then Christ died in vain.
In vain, exactly.
Yeah, it is in vain. Now, by the way, Gabriel, you don't sound like you're from Raleigh.
I'm from New York originally.
Forget about it. Unbelievable.
Queens.
So am I. I'm from New
Queens,
Jersey.
New York.
So.
Queens,
all right.
New York.
All right. Mets or Yankees?
Mets, because I live not too far from Shea
Stadium.
Yeah,
I grew up going to Shea Stadium all the time. Jets or Giants?
Giants.
I'm with you. Okay, I don't mind the Jets either, but I like the Giants too. All right. Now, what are you doing in Raleigh?
Well, I moved here about 10 years ago. Oh, no, more than that. What am I saying? In 2000.
Uh-huh.
I moved here. Yeah, and I never intend to move back to New York City. I love visiting. But
yes.
I just never intend to live there again.
Well, a lot of people come down this way and they realize, first of all, the weather's much more temperate. It's a little bit more relaxed. And so,
and
the taxes
room.
Are much lower.
So,
there is more room. Well, thanks for the call, Gabriel. Keep doing what you're doing out
there.
All right, God bless. Frank Turk with you. More on I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist right after the break. And if you want this program on CD, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978 for $20. We'll also give you I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist with it. Back in two.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
No, it's Dr. Frank Turek. Dr. Michael Brown in China right now on a mission. And he'll be back, well, at least he'll be on the program tomorrow telling you what's going on over there in China, so you don't want to miss this tomorrow, the program. If you want to be on the program today, we're talking about I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. The phone number is 1-866-34-TRUTH, 1-866-34-TRUTH. And let's talk about the fourth question. And for those of you just tuning in, you're going, what's the fourth question? Let me review the questions that we need to answer in the affirmative to show that Christianity is true. We've discussed the first three already, so you got to get the CD of this program if you want the first three. The first question is, does truth exist? The second question is, does God exist? The third question is, are miracles possible? We've already answered those questions in the affirmative. The question we're going to cover now is the New Testament true? What evidence do we have that the New Testament is true? Well, actually, in our book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, we have a chapter called The Top 10 Reasons We Know the New Testament Writers Told the Truth. The Top 10 Reasons We Know the New Testament Writers Told the Truth. We don't have time to talk about that here today. Let me just give you one of them. And this reason doesn't stand alone. It goes with the other ones. But it's a piece of corroborating evidence that I think points to the fact that the New Testament writers are actually telling us the truth. And that is called the principle of embarrassment. We call this embarrassing testimony. There's a lot of embarrassing testimony in the New Testament. And it's even true of the Old Testament. That wouldn't have been made up if the New Testament writers were inventing a story. In fact, let me ask you the question this way. Have you ever lied to make yourself look good? Well, of course you have. And if you say no to yourself right now, you're lying right now to make yourself look good. Of course you've lied to make yourself look good. But have you ever lied to make yourself look bad? No, you don't lie to make yourself look bad. You might lie to make yourself look good, but you won't lie to make yourself look bad. Well, it turns out the New Testament, and again, even the Old Testament, are filled with embarrassing details that they wouldn't have made up. They wouldn't have lied to make up these details. For example, the New Testament writers depict themselves as dim-witted. They fail to understand what Jesus is saying several times. They don't really get what Jesus is doing and what his mission is until he's already left. He's already risen from the dead and ascended to heaven. They don't get it. They fall asleep on Jesus a couple of times. That's embarrassing. They make no effort to give Jesus a proper burial. Who buries Jesus? Well, it's Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus. While they ran away for fear of the Jews, Joseph goes and buries Jesus? Why would they make Joseph look like a good guy while they ran away and hid for fear of the Jews? Joseph was a member of the Sanhedrin. He sentenced Jesus to die, or at least the council did, the Sanhedrin. That's the Jewish ruling council. Why would they make him look like a good guy while they ran away? And why would they put Jesus in a Jewish tomb? What could the Jews have done if the Christians claimed that Jesus had risen from the dead, but Jesus' own body was in the Jews' own tomb? They obviously could have gone to their own tomb, taken out the body, and said, he's dead. Here's his body. He didn't rise from the dead. Stop all this nonsense talk about the resurrection. They didn't do that at all. What did they do? They said, the disciples came and stole the body while the guards were asleep. Now, that's a bad explanation for at least two reasons. Reason number one, if you're a Roman guard on duty and you fall asleep on watch, what happens to you? You're executed. You're toast. Reason number two, if you're a Roman guard on duty and you fall asleep on watch, how do you know what happened? You couldn't. You were asleep. And the third reason, of course, is what motive would the disciples have to steal the body anyway? What, to get themselves beaten, tortured, and killed? There's no motive here. You say, well, how do you know this story's even true? Well, the Gospel of Matthew tells us this. Well, how do you know Matthew's telling the truth? It's not just Matthew. For the first 150 years or so of Christianity, there's an ongoing debate between Christians and Jews. Christians kept saying Jesus has risen from the dead. The Jews kept saying, no, the disciples came and stole the body while the guards were asleep. Now, that's a bad explanation, but the explanation admits what? That the tomb was empty. The Jews wouldn't have to come up with an empty tomb story if he was still in there. It's embarrassing. They're admitting it. They wouldn't have done it if it... They wouldn't have made this up. Anyway, more after the break. I'm Frank Turek. Don't touch that dial.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's Dr. Frank Turek with you. Dr. Brown will be back tomorrow from China. You don't want to miss that program. He's out there doing God's work across the world, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if you guys know the qualifications of Dr. Michael Brown, but he is really one of a kind. I know if you've been listening to Line of Fire for a long time, you already know this, but for those of you that don't, Dr. Brown is a world-renowned expert in biblical languages and Jewish apologetics. That's why there are many people out there, Jewish folks, who go after Dr. Brown trying to say that Jesus is not the Messiah. But Dr. Brown has written so many books in defense of Jesus being the Messiah. He is the number one target of those who trying to say Jesus is not the Messiah. And as you know, he's a wonderful, wonderful gentleman. He lives in the same area I do, Charlotte, so we get together on occasion. He's just as nice and kind, as intelligent as he is on the air as he is in person and vice versa. So you're listening to a great guy when you listen to the Line of Fire. And by the way, wouldn't it be great? I mean, he's out in China, you know, he's working out there, I think, with the Billy Graham organization, maybe Samaritan's Purse. Wouldn't it be great if you could, if you were to come back and find out that some more people have joined his organization as torchbearers? Because, you know, this is a listener-supported radio, ladies and gentlemen. And if you get a lot out of the Line of Fire, maybe you can give something back to Dr. Brown. And if you do that, if you call in and make a donation, Dr. Brown, and become a torchbearer, a monthly supporter, Dr. Brown will send you the new book that he's writing right now. It's going to come out next month. It's called Authentic Fire, a response to John MacArthur's Strange Fire. It's only going to be sold through Dr. Brown's ministry, AskDrBrown.org. Call us at 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. You can order online. Any gift, you'll get this new book. And if you want to also maybe get the book that I co-wrote with Dr. Geiser as Christmas gift, it's called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. You can use that same number, 1-800-278-9978. We'll also send you a CD of this program. All right, so check that out. Again, 1-800-278-9978. Let's talk a little bit more about embarrassing testimony, then we'll get back to your phone calls. And as I mentioned, embarrassing testimony is something that the New Testament writers wouldn't have made up. They wouldn't have made up all these embarrassing details because you don't make embarrassing details up about yourself. You may hide embarrassing details. You don't make them up. For example, Peter, their leader, is called Satan by Jesus. Do you think they made that up? Do you think Mark, who recorded that, went to Peter one day and said, "Hey, Pete, I'm going to make this a really interesting story. I'm going to have the Lord call you Satan"? What do you think Peter would have said? "Look, I'm the leader here. Have him call you Satan." Why would he be calling me Satan? They're not making this up. Also, notice that Paul rebukes Peter for being wrong about a theological issue. In Galatians chapter 2, he said, look, Paul says to Peter, "I told Peter to his face that he was wrong for trying to get these New Testament believers to obey the Old Testament law." Now, if they're making all this theology up, why is one leader of the church arguing with another leader in the church over theology if they're making it up? Because they're not making it up. They're just trying to get it right. Also, notice Peter denies Christ three times after saying, "I'll never deny you, Lord." And then the disciples run away at the crucifixion. This is like a Monty Python movie. Run away! And they all run away. And who are the brave ones? Ladies, if you're listening. The ladies, the women are the brave ones. Now, who wrote the New Testament down? It was men. Now, what man is going to say that he was hiding for fear of the Jews while the women went down and discovered the empty tomb? Would any man make that up? I mean, if I was making it up, I'd write something down like, let's see, we marched right down there and overpowered that elite Roman guard. Yeah, that sounds good. And then we saw Jesus, who congratulated us on our great faith. And then we went and comforted the trembling women. I would never say that I was a coward while the women went down and discovered the empty tomb. Yet All four Gospels say that. Oh, by the way, why would you never say that in that culture, that the women were the first witnesses? Because in that culture, a woman's testimony was not considered on par with that of a man. So if you're making up the New Testament story, you'd only have the men be the first witnesses. Yet all four Gospels say the women were the first witnesses. All four Gospels say that. Why? Because they really were. If they were making it up, they wouldn't have said that. I actually had one lady, you know, I do this, I don't have enough faith to be an atheist presentation a lot at college campuses and also at churches and some high schools as well. And I remember one lady came up to me after I was talking about this section about embarrassing testimony. And she came up to me and she said, "I know why Jesus appeared to the women first." I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because he wanted to get the story out." I said, "You know, that is an excellent point." Because ladies, if you're listening out there, if your man comes home from work, does he say much? No. There could have been a nuclear explosion down at the plant. He's not going to tell you, right? Imagine Peter coming home from work that Resurrection Sunday. His wife sees him and says, "Hey, honey, anything happen at work today?" "Nah, same old, same old." Wait. "I heard Jesus had risen from the dead just like he had predicted. Is it true?" Oh, yeah, it is. "What do you got to eat around here?" You know, I mean, men don't say much, do they? I mean, it doesn't. They're not making this up. They would not embarrass themselves this way. They're just telling the truth. And by the way, the same is true of the Old Testament. They just tell the truth. And notice that the Old Testament is filled with embarrassing details, even with David, a man after God's own heart. Look, he's an adulterer. He's a liar. He's a murderer. There's only one person in the entire scripture that is free of any blemish. And that, of course, is the Savior himself. He had to come. Because we are sinners. But you don't find this kind of history in other cultures. For example, in the Egyptian culture, you don't find embarrassing details about the Pharaoh. Why? Because any historian writing for the Pharaoh would have his head chopped off if he said anything embarrassing about the Pharaoh. But the New Testament and the Old Testament, they tell it like it is. They expose all the warts, all the sins, all the problems of their supposed heroes. Why? Because they're telling the truth and they wouldn't have made it up anyway. That's just one section of the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, and the I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist presentation. Again, you can get the book by going to calling 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. $20 gets you the book and the CD from this particular program. And if you want more on what we do, my name's Frank Turek, filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. Go to our website, crossexamined.org, crossexamined.org. We go to a lot of colleges, high schools, churches. If you'd like a seminar at your college, high school, or church, just go to our website. You can email me directly, frank@crossexamined.org. That's frank@crossexamined.org. Let me get back to the phone lines because we have people holding on. And if you want to join the program, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-TRUTH. Let me go to Abe all the way down in Tyler, Texas. Abe, you're on with Frank Turek. Go right ahead, sir.
Hey, Frank, I love it, man. You got a great sense of humor. Hey, I'm in a ongoing debate, I guess you could call it, with a Judaizer. And
yes.
Is there an argument for the New Testament scriptures being God-breathed?
Well, the data that I'm going through right now, and we do in the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, I think points to the fact that it is. Now, of course, the New Testament claims that for itself. In fact, now that doesn't necessarily mean it's true. That would be a circular argument. But are there scriptures in the New Testament that are saying this is the word of God? And yes, there are. In fact, if you look at 2 Timothy 3, where Paul says all scriptures God breathed, and it's good for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and righteousness.
Yes, sir, but their argument with that is that at the time, the New Testament writings were not in place, so they're referring to the Tanakh.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily true either, because Paul refers to one of Luke's passages as being the Word of God, and Peter refers to Paul where he says that some of Paul's writings are hard to understand, like the other scriptures, right? Like the other scriptures. So Peter is referring to Paul's writings as being at the same level as the writings of the Old Testament, the scriptures.
I'll try that approach.
This is all in our book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Check that out.
I'm going to get it.
All right, brother.
Man, I appreciate you.
All right. God bless. Thanks very much. Again, the book is available if you want to call. $20 gets you the book and the DVD. Or the DVD. I keep saying that. The CD of this program. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. So if you want to do that, you can. You can also find many other resources at our website, crossexamined.org. We have DVD sets. That's probably what's on my mind. We have DVD sets of this if you're interested. And friends, if you've been with me the whole 2 hours, you know this is an epidemic problem that young people are leaving the church once they leave the home. About 3 out of every 4 do. You need to inoculate them before they leave the home. You need to get them evidence that Christianity is true. That's what I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist does. There's a DVD set. There's a workbook. There's a curriculum. There's the Ginzu knives with I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Okay, the last part, no. But you get the idea. There's a lot of product out there that you can get that will help you know why Christianity is true. Don't send them off into college unarmed. The easiest way to get picked off in a war is to not know you're in one. You're in one.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's Dr. Frank Turek with you, filling in for Dr. Brown, who'll be back tomorrow from China. And to give you an update as to what he's doing out there, we're talking today about I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, the evidence that Christianity is true, based on our a book I co-wrote with Dr. Norman Geisler. And one of the evidences for the fact that the New Testament writers are telling the truth is something I call an excruciating testimony. We mentioned a minute ago or before the break, embarrassing testimony, but there's something else out there called excruciating testimony. And this is the argument that says that the people who were in a position to know whether Jesus had risen from the dead died excruciating deaths when they could have simply denied that he had risen from the dead and continued their practice in Judaism. But they didn't do that at all. They suffered horribly for saying Jesus had risen from the dead. In fact, if you think about this, all the early writers of the New Testament, except for Luke, everybody's a Jew, right? They're all Jews. And the early believers were all Jews. They thought they were God's chosen people. They thought they had a 2,000-plus-year-old relationship with the God of the universe. And yet, virtually overnight, they become Christians. And they abandoned a lot of Jewish practices. You know, they believed in animal sacrifice before Jesus came. They had been doing that for hundreds of years. Then Christ comes along and they say, you know, we no longer need to sacrifice these lambs because the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world is here. All the lambs we've been sacrificing for hundreds of years are just symbols of the true Lamb. Here's the true Lamb. And so they get rid of this animal sacrifice system that they had for so long. Before, they believed in a binding law of Moses. Afterwards, they believed Christ's life has fulfilled the binding law of Moses. All 613 laws from the Old Testament were fulfilled in one guy. And so it's no longer binding on them. Before, they believed in strict monotheism. Afterward, they believed in a trinity, three persons in one divine essence. Yes, I know the Trinity is hinted at in the Old Testament. It's much clearer in the New. Before, they believed in a conquering Messiah. Afterwards, they believed in a sacrificial Messiah. Before, these New Testament believers believed in circumcision. Afterwards, they believed in baptism and communion. Now, what would have caused these pious Jews to abandon all these practices and adopt all these new practices virtually overnight, especially when they thought they were God's chosen people? There's only one thing I can think of. And that's what psychologists call an impact event. What's an impact event? An impact event is something that is so dramatic in your life that it impacts you to such a point that it can change your beliefs dramatically. And it can also cause you to remember the event for the rest of your life. You might not remember what you had for breakfast this morning, but you'll remember an impact event that happened 50 years ago if you're old enough. In fact, let me ask you guys a question. Only some of you are going to be able to answer this question, those of you listening right now. But if you're old enough, can you remember where you were and what you were doing November 22nd, 1963, which tomorrow will be 50 years? Some of you can. I can. I was 2 years old and 2 days on November 22nd, 1963. If you're doing the math, I'm 52. I turned 52 yesterday. But I can remember standing in the living room, and my mother was sitting on an ottoman in front of the TV, weeping uncontrollably. And I remember saying, "Mommy, what's the matter? What's the matter? They killed the president. They killed the president." I can still see her in my mind. President Kennedy assassinated that day. I can still see her sobbing in my mind right now. I can see her when she was 26 years old. I had dinner with her last night. She's 75 right now. But I can see her in my mind right now when she was 26 years old. That's my earliest memory, an impact event. Many of you out there can remember that. Many more will be able to remember this. Where were you when the second plane hit the tower? Yeah, you can remember, can't you? Because it was an impact event. In fact, I was on the phone. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. I was on the phone with a pastor in Charlotte. He wanted me to come speak at his church over at some particular date, and we were trying to figure out what topic would be most appropriate. And I had my back to the TV, but I had seen the first tower had been hit. And I said, "You got the TV on?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Something going on up in New York. Maybe a Cessna hit the World Trade Tower or something." And so we're talking. Again, my back's to the TV. Suddenly, he screams into the phone, "The second tower has been hit." I turned around, look at the TV. The second tower's on fire. I said, What happened? Another plane hit?" "Yeah." I go, "What kind of plane? A Cessna?" He goes, "No, it wasn't a Cessna. It was a big plane. It was a United plane. It was a passenger plane. It went right in there, exploded." I said, "You saw that?" He said, "Yeah, it was on TV. I was just watching it." I said, "Look, I'll call you back." I hung up the phone. For some reason that morning, I had CNN on, the Communist News Network. Anyway, it's a joke, friends. Lighten up. I'm not making this up. But the commentator on CNN said this: "One has to think there's some sort of navigational error there here." I said, "Navigational error? You dimwit. What do you think? The pilots can't see where they're going? Please, this is terrorism." I called the pastor back the next day. I said, "We're going to come to your church and talk about Islam, because I think that's what this is related to. This is terrorism." Now, 9/11 was over 12 years ago. But if I were to ask you where you were and what you were doing that day, you could tell me. But if I were to ask you where you were on November 11th of this year, which was less than 2 weeks ago, very few of you could tell me why. Because there was no impact event that day. Do you think a resurrection would have been an impact event? Do you think if Jesus really rose from the dead, they would have remembered everything that Jesus was saying and everything Jesus was doing till the day they died? And do you think the New Testament writers would have remembered everything they were saying and everything they were doing till the day they died? Of course. That's the only way I can explain why they would have abandoned all their Jewish beliefs for all these new Christian beliefs virtually overnight. It was an impact event. They had no trouble remembering it, and they had no trouble then going to their deaths because of it, because they knew it happened. They knew it happened. I mean, a lot of people say, "Well, the New Testament writers made up the New Testament story." Oh, really? Let's think about that for 30 seconds. What did the New Testament writers have to gain by making up a new religion? What did they have to gain? Well, first of all, they got excommunicated from the synagogue, and then they got beaten, tortured, and killed. Last time I checked, that was not a list of perks. "We're going to start a new religion." "We are?" "Yeah, what's it going to get us?" "Well, first it'll get us excommunicated, and then we'll get beaten, tortured, and killed." Well, sign me up. No, I don't think so. They didn't do that, okay? They had every motive to say the resurrection did not happen, not every motive to say it did. You know, there's people out there saying, "Oh, they made it all up, and, you know, I can't trust the New Testament documents. I can only trust what the secular writers say." That's nonsense. The folks who had everything to lose are the folks that wrote down the New Testament. They got nothing by saying, they would get nothing by making it up. They had everything to lose by saying it was true. Yet they went ahead and said it was true anyway. There's excellent evidence that the New Testament's true. And if the New Testament's true, then Christianity's true. If truth exists, God exists, miracles are possible, and the New Testament's reliable, Christianity follows. If you want more on that, get the book, "I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist." And if you can get the CD of this show by calling 800-278-9978, $20 donation will get you the book and the CD of this show. And also, check us out on the website, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. I'm Frank Turek. It's been a pleasure filling in for the great Dr. Michael Brown. We'll be back tomorrow. You don't want to miss Dr. Brown on the Line of Fire. Thanks, folks. See you next time.